Hello and welcome to Healthy Aging. I'm Barbara Kipps for the Virginia Voice. Today we'll be reading from Focus on Healthy Aging, the May edition. Colonoscopy is a highly effective screening test, but should you get one after age 75? Depending on your age, the risks that accompany the test may outweigh its benefits. Nobody wants to think about it, much less undergo colorectal screening, especially if it involves having a colonoscopy. But it's definitely worth keeping up with routine colonoscopies, says Mount Sinai gastroenterologist Bridgen J. Shaw, MD. Colonoscopy is considered the gold standard screening test for colorectal cancer, since it checks the entire colon, he explains. If any polyps or abnormal growths that can develop into cancer are detected, they can be removed during a colonoscopy procedure. Colonoscopy is recommended every 10 years for people at average risk for colorectal cancer. If polyps are detected during the test, you may have to have more frequent colonoscopies. Other colorectal cancer screening tests are also available. But once you reach age 75 and older, the benefits of colorectal cancer screening, particularly colonoscopy, are much less clear. Even so, recent research suggests that many Americans still get the test after age 75. Personalizing your decision. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, the USPSTF, and the American Cancer Society, the ACS, recommend people be getting screened for colorectal cancer at age 45 and continue until age 75. Both the USPSTF and the ACS advise people ages 75 and older to discuss with their doctor whether they should continue screening, and state that those ages 85 and up should no longer be screened for colorectal cancer. Dr. Shaw says that this advice reflects the fact that colonoscopy, in particular, presents risks for people ages 75 and older. The rate of colonoscopy-related complications, such as bowel perforation, bleeding, and heart and lung problems, increases with advancing age, he explains. Also, colorectal cancer progresses very slowly. It typically takes 10 years or longer for a polyp to develop into symptomatic colorectal cancer. This means that screening may not make sense for people whose life expectancy is less likely than 10 years, especially if they have chronic conditions that impact their health status. Age versus life expectancy. A recent UT Southwestern study published in the American Journal of Gastroenterology, February 2024, including 28,555 people ages 65 to 84, showed that about 28% of past year screening occurred in adults whose life expectancy was less than 10 years. The study authors suggest that an age-based approach to colorectal cancer screening may result in overscreening among younger adults with chronic conditions and underscreening in older, healthier adults. Some people may not fit neatly into the age-based recommendations, Dr. Shaw says. This is why any decision to stop or continue colorectal cancer screening should be made after discussing with your doctor all the possible benefits and risks associated with screening. A very fit person who is 75 or older may live long enough to benefit from screening and may want to be screened. On the other hand, you may want to stop screening well before age 75 if your health is precarious. Surveillance colonoscopies. In the study, about 51% of people ages 75 to 84 had a life expectancy of less than 10 years when they were screened. But one thing Dr. Shaw emphasizes is that we don't know the circumstances under which the oldest participants had a colonoscopy. The study authors were unable to clarify whether these were screening, diagnostic, or surveillance colonoscopies, he notes. It is possible that these individuals were undergoing surveillance screening due to a history of polyps. This type of screening also needs careful consideration if you may not live long enough to benefit. In a 2023 Dartmouth Institute study looking at surveillance colonoscopies in 9,831 people ages 65 and older, only 8% of participants were found to have advanced polyps during the procedure. Advanced polyps are defined as polyps that are more likely to be precursors of colorectal cancer due to their size or type. Even so, 58% were advised to return for further screening, even when their life expectancy was less than 5 years. Informed decision-making is vital. Overall, these study findings underline the importance of identifying people older than 75 who may benefit from screening while simultaneously identifying younger people who may not. If you are wondering whether to continue screening, Dr. Shaw reiterates that it is important to think as objectively as you can about your health status and likely life expectancy. If you are sure you have a good chance of living another 10 years or more, you may benefit from screening. But keep in mind that the older and less healthy you are, the less likely it is you will need to worry about polyps progressing to become cancerous, or colorectal cancer advancing to the stage where it becomes symptomatic. What you should know. Colonoscopy is considered the gold standard screening method since it checks the entire colon and polyps can be removed during the procedure. Symptoms that may signal colorectal cancer include a change in your bowel habits, such as constipation or diarrhea that is not explained by dietary habits or illness, blood in your stools, persistent abdominal discomfort, cramping pains, and excess gas. The sense that your bowel has not emptied completely after passing stools. And unexplained weight loss, weakness, and fatigue. Here's a description of the different types of colon screening tests. A colonoscopy. It's done every 10 years, more frequently if your doctor advises it. A colonoscope, a tube-like instrument with a light and a tiny camera lens at the tip, is passed through the rectum into the colon and then slowly withdrawn. Any polyps that are detected are removed using a snare instrument inserted through the colonoscope. Colonoscopy is performed under sedation. Food avoidance and fasting are required before the test, along with a bowel prep in the form of a laxative that clears the colon. A sigmoidoscopy is done every 5 years or every 10 years if combined with an annual fecal immunochemical test. This test is similar to a colonoscopy, but it examines only about one-third of the colon. If any polyps are detected and removed, you will likely be advised to undergo a colonoscopy to check the rest of the colon. A CT colonography is done every 5 years. It uses a computed tomography to scan the colon. Less invasive than a colonoscopy, but bowel prep is required. If polyps are detected, you will need to undergo colonoscopy to remove them. This is not covered by Medicare. A fecal immunochemical test. or a fecal occult blood test is done annually. For this in-home test, you take a stool sample and drop it off at your doctor's office, or send it directly to the lab to be examined for the presence of blood. A positive result should be followed by a follow-up colonoscopy in most cases. A stool DNA test, trade name Cologuard, is done every 3 years. For this in-home test, you take a stool sample and send it directly to a lab to be examined for abnormal cells that could indicate cancer. A positive result should be followed up with a colonoscopy in most cases. That was called colonoscopy is a highly effective screening test, but should you get one after age 75? The next article, also from the same publication, is called Sharpen Your Vision with the Right Glasses. Different types of corrective lenses come with pros and cons that could affect how well you see. Have you noticed that holding your newspaper further away makes the print easier to read? If so, you likely have presbyopia, a type of visual discrepancy that sets in after about age 45. The condition occurs when the lens, the eye's focusing mechanism, becomes less able to change shape when you look from a distance object to something close, says Masako Chen, MD, a board-certified ophthalmologist at Mount Sinai. You can solve the problem by picking up an inexpensive pair of reading glasses at the local pharmacy. But it's better to see an eye doctor who can prescribe appropriate corrective lenses. Most importantly, your doctor can look for cataracts, glaucoma, macular degeneration, or changes in the eye related to other medical problems, like high blood pressure and diabetes, Dr. Chen says. If these conditions are not diagnosed and treated properly, you run the risk of irreversible vision loss. Vision corrective options. The most basic glasses, single vision, are a good choice if your distance vision is good and you need glasses only for reading or computer use. But if your distance vision also needs correction, multifocals may be the most practical option since they save you from constantly switching between two separate pairs. Multifocal glasses can be bifocal, trifocal, or progressive, says Dr. Chen. Depending on which type your eye doctor recommends, they correct for 2 to 3 distances in one lens. Bifocals contain separate zones for near and distant vision, while trifocals have separate zones for distant, intermittent, like looking at a computer screen, for example, and close-up tasks. Both bifocals and trifocals typically have a line or lines separating their different zones. And some people don't like this for cosmetic reasons, Dr. Chen notes. Progressive lenses don't have lines, but tend to be more expensive. Progressive lenses sound ideal, but some studies have suggested that older adults who use them may be at greater risk of falls, particularly when they first start wearing progressives. With these lenses, it's important to pitch your head so that you are seeing through the correct portion of the lens for whatever task you're doing. Otherwise, your vision will be blurred. That means tilting your head slightly up for near vision so that you don't bump into things or trip over obstacles at floor level. Other options. You may want to talk to your eye doctor about monovision correction, which involves wearing contact lenses that correct for different distances. Monovision works because people tend to have a dominant eye that sends more accurate information to the brain. In monovision, a lens correcting for distant vision is used in the dominant eye, and a lens correcting for near vision is used in the non-dominant eye, Dr. Chen explains. This approach can be a good alternative to reading glasses, but it's a good idea to try it out first at your eye doctor's office before you commit. It is also possible to have multifocal contact lenses implanted in your eyes. These intraocular lenses, or IOLs, replace the natural lens of the eye, which is removed during the implant procedure. If you are interested in doing IOLs, your eye doctor will do some imaging to make sure you are a good candidate, depending on the anatomy of your eye and your vision prescription, Dr. Chen says. While IOLs can eliminate the need for glasses, some people who have them report side effects, including a halo effect around lights and difficulty seeing in low light. Practicalities. Select frames from lightweight, flexible titanium instead of heavy plastic. Frames should fit snugly but not too tightly, and the bridge should feel comfortable. Check that it doesn't slip down your nose, as this could reduce the corrective effect of the lenses. You also may want to consider getting an anti-reflective ultraviolet UV coating. This protects your eyes against UV radiation from the sun and improves contrast, making it easier to read and distinguish certain objects. It may add a slight green or purple tint to the lenses. If you're more sensitive to glare now that you're older, you can opt for transition lenses that darken when exposed to the sun. Protecting your eyes from strong sunlight is important as you age, since UV light can damage the cornea and lens. Some studies have suggested that exposure to bright sunlight may increase the risk of developing cataracts and age-related macular degeneration. Transition lenses may take a few moments to lighten when you come indoors from being outside in the sun, Dr. Chen says. That article was titled, Sharpen Your Vision with the Right Glasses. Next up is an article called, Calculating and Understanding Your Fracture Risk. Recent updates and additions would help make a widely used fracture risk calculator more accurate, but research suggests that the way the results are reported could be improved. If you have been diagnosed with a bone-thinning disease, osteoporosis, you may be aware that the condition makes you vulnerable to fragility as you age. But just what is your risk of fracture? An online tool called FRAX, spelled F-R-A-X, can be used to clarify this. And in 2023, the tool was updated to account for additional variables that contribute to fracture probability. But while FRAX is widely used by clinicians to pinpoint who might benefit from osteoporosis screening and treatment, recent research suggests that there may be a communication gap between them and their patients when it comes to discussing fracture risk. There is a potential for this gap to result in older adults underestimating the consequences of fractures, which can be devastating. Studies have pointed to a 20 to 30% risk of death in the year following a hip fracture, and 80% of people who sustain this type of fracture lose the ability to perform at least one activity of daily living, says Mount Sinai geriatrician Patricia Bloom, MD. Many older adults who suffer a fracture don't regain their prior independence. Natural processes may weaken older bones. Osteoporosis develops due to a natural process of the body. Bone is not inert. It is constantly in flux, being broken down by specialized cells called osteoclasts and rebuilt by counterpart cells called osteoblasts. This remodeling process maintains skeletal strength by replacing old bone, but as we age, bone is broken down faster than it is rebuilt. Postmenopausal women are particularly at risk for this imbalance because menopause causes levels of the hormone estrogen to fall, Dr. Bloom explains. Estrogen contributes to bone strength because it stimulates osteoblasts to make new bone. Contributing factors. Other factors also play a part in osteoporosis. For example, we absorb less calcium, a vital ingredient for strong bones, from food as we get older. Moreover, the kidneys become less effective or efficient at conserving calcium we do absorb. With less calcium coming in and more being excreted in urine, the bones may tap into the calcium stored in bones. Certain medical conditions, for example, celiac disease and rheumatoid arthritis, may worsen bone loss. So can some drugs, including corticosteroids like prednisone, the breast cancer drugs anastrozole and exemestane, and some epilepsy medications. Long-term use of proton pump inhibitors, or PPIs, like omeprazole or Prilosex, which is used to reduce stomach acid in people with gastroesophageal reflux disease, may contribute to osteoporosis because PPIs impair calcium absorption. Osteoporosis screening. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends women ages 65 and older be screened for osteoporosis. The standard screening approach utilizes dual energy X-ray absorptiometry, also called DEXA. DEXA calculates how many grams of calcium and other bone minerals are packed into a segment of bone by measuring how much the X-ray beam passes through the bone. The spine, hip, and wrist are screened, since these are the areas most likely to be affected by osteoporosis and osteoporotic bone fractures. DEXA results compare your bone density to that of a healthy 30-year-old adult and give you what is called a T-score. A range of minus 1 and above indicates normal bone density. A score between minus 1 and minus 2.5 indicates osteopenia, low bone density. And minus 2.5 and lower indicates osteoporosis. If your T-score is minus 2.5 or lower, your doctor will likely recommend osteoporosis medications to slow the bone loss. A smaller type of bone scanner often is available for public use in pharmacies and can measure peripheral bone density in the finger, wrist, or heel. These scanners don't provide as accurate a measure of bone density as a DEXA, but if you use one and get an abnormal result, ask your doctor if you should have a follow-up DEXA scan. Accessing future risk. Your doctor may input the results of your DEXA scan into the FRAX tool to gauge your fracture risk. The tool can also be used to assess whether postmenopausal women younger than age 65 should be screened for osteoporosis. These younger women typically have risk factors for osteoporosis, such as a lower body weight, less than 127 pounds, a family history of osteoporosis, sustaining a fracture after 50, a long-term smoking habit, and excessive alcohol intake. FRAX can be used to determine whether people with osteopenia may benefit from taking osteoporosis medications too. Studies have suggested that most fragility fractures occur in people with osteopenia, as opposed to those who meet the criteria for a diagnosis of osteoporosis, Dr. Bloom says. FRAX results consist of two percentage scores. One indicates the probability you will suffer a major osteoporotic fracture within the next years, and the other indicates the probability that you will suffer a hip fracture within the same 10-year window. Osteoporosis medications are typically considered if your risk for a major osteoporosis-related fracture is 20% or greater, or your risk for hip fracture is 3% or greater, regardless of the DEXA results. The original version of FRAX relies on age, body mass index, a relation of height and weight, and other well-validated risk factors. However, it doesn't take into account dose responses for serious risk for several risk factors, including glucocorticosteroid use, smoking, and alcohol intake, a person's fall history, or how recently a person suffered a fracture. The updated version of FRAX, called FRAX Plus, which it recently became available to clinicians, addresses these shortfalls. It also includes additional variables, including the presence and duration of type 2 diabetes and your trabecular bone score, TBS, which is calculated during a DEXA scan and offers clues about the quality of bone as opposed to its density. Dr. Bloom says the additional information should help doctors more accurately predict a person's risk of osteoporotic falls or fractures within the next decade and tailor treatment decisions and fracture prevention education accordingly. The risk of a recurrent fragility fracture is particularly high immediately following a fracture, so it is useful to know when a person's most recent fracture occurred, she notes. While FRAX previously assumed a person was taking a moderate dose of oral corticosteroids, FRAX Plus enables doctors to factor in higher doses. Being able to consider type 2 diabetes is also helpful, since the original version of FRAX underestimates fracture risk in people with the condition, even though it influences fracture risk. A low TBS is associated with an increased risk of fracture independent of FRAX and hip bone density, while a history of falls is associated with an increased hip and major osteoporotic fracture risk. The original FRAX tool assumed an average exposure to falls in the last year, but doctors can now adjust this detail to be specific. Communication gap. A new study has found that although most people with osteoporosis would like to information regarding their fracture risk, only about half of them receive it. For the study, researchers examined data from 332 postmenopausal women with osteoporosis. Among the participants, 48% had a history of fracture and 50% were taking osteoporosis medications. The analysis showed that even though 86% of the participants indicated that information about the fracture risk was of the highest importance, only 56% had received the information about their fracture risk. Almost all the participants expressed their desire to be informed about the more devastating consequences of fractures and were especially concerned about the risk of being able to or unable to walk, the loss of independence and quality of life. When it came to the way the FRAX results were presented, the study participants were shown three options. One used verbal information and a number to denote the percentage risk. One used a traffic light colored graph, and one used an array of smiley faces and sad face icons. About 60% of the participants said they preferred the visual presentation of their fracture risk probability with a traffic light colored graph compared with the other options. This option also was the most associated with motivating the initiation of medical treatment. Hearing a number-based risk factor may not be as effective as seeing that you are in the red for danger zone when it comes to your fracture risk, especially if English isn't your first language or your numeric literacy isn't the best, Dr. Bloom says. That article was called Calculating and Understanding Your Fracture Risk. All of our articles today came from Focus on Healthy Aging, the May 2024 issue. This program is also available on demand at www.virginiavoice.org. I'm Barbara Kipps for the Virginia Voice.